This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Friday, November 15th, a day when the Ukraine investigation intersected with the Russia investigation. It's the day of former ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch's live public testimony before the House Intelligence Committee and the conviction of Roger Stone, longtime Trump advisor, for lying to the same committee to obstruct the Russia investigation. Here's one of the key moments of Yovanovitch's testimony. Remember, as we play this, that Rudy Giuliani and President Trump had concluded that Ambassador Yovanovitch was a problem for them, and Trump did eventually recall her from that post. In this one-minute excerpt from her opening statement, Ambassador Yovanovitch describes working against corruption in Ukraine, which made some people unhappy.
Not all Ukrainians embraced our anti-corruption work. Thus, perhaps it was not surprising that when our anti-corruption efforts got in the way of a desire for profit or power, Ukrainians who preferred to play by the old corrupt rules sought to remove me. What continues to amaze me is that they found Americans willing to partner with them, and working together, they apparently succeeded in orchestrating the removal of a U.S. ambassador. How could our system fail like this? How is it that foreign corrupt interests could manipulate our government? Which country's interests are served when the very corrupt behavior we have been criticizing is allowed to prevail? Such conduct undermines the U.S., exposes our friends, and widens the playing field for autocrats like President Putin.
Marie Yovanovitch, from her testimony this morning, we'll hear more excerpts as we go and get into how the Roger Stone conviction might relate with New Yorker staff writer Masha Gessen, Russian-American journalist, winner of the National Book Award in 2017 for The Future is History, How Totalitarianism Reclaimed Russia. Hi, Masha. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Can you start by helping us understand that piece of testimony that we just heard in context to the extent that you know? What was the nature of the corruption that Ambassador Yovanovitch was fighting, and whatever connection she was alleging there between corrupt Ukrainians and any Americans?
So the corruption that Ambassador Yovanovitch is referring to is pervasive. It is, as I think she states correctly and quite insightfully, Ukraine has really been struggling in this sort of liminal space between a functioning democracy and a post-communist mafia state, and has seen two revolutions, both of which have tried to move it toward a democratic functioning state with good governance, and both of which have stumbled and so far are failing. So she's describing that situation, and I think connecting very correctly sort of American efforts in trying to prop up the democratic government in Ukraine with American efforts to try to help fight corruptions and to pressure Ukrainian authorities into addressing the problem of corruption.
So that's the corruption. But she was saying there was a connection between alleged corrupt Ukrainians who didn't like her attempts to fight the corruption and Americans.
So she's talking about these American actors, both of them emigres from the Soviet Union, who show up out of nowhere. And she starts hearing from them, not because they come to the embassy, as would be normal for American businessmen trying to do business in a country.
Are these the Rudy Giuliani associates who've now been indicted here in the U.S., Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman?
Those are the people. And they have a scheme for exporting natural gas that ultimately leads nowhere, but they decide that Ambassador Yovanovitch is in the way. And what appears to have been a character assassination campaign against Ambassador Yovanovitch basically begins with them.
Because they're making money or representing people who are making money.
Or who want to make money.
Off corrupt activities in Ukraine, which she's opposing?
I would say that they want to make money off of keeping things as they are in Ukraine. I think this is a really important point, of keeping things running in the exact same corrupt ways as they've been running for years.
So the impeachment allegations against Trump are focused on Trump bribing or blackmailing the president of Ukraine to announce investigations to help his reelection campaign. Is it clear to you if Ambassador Yovanovitch was seen as somehow standing in the way of that not just this status quo financial corruption in Ukraine?
Well, as you know, she hasn't testified to this directly. The pressure on the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, began after, or that we know of, right, began after Ambassador Yovanovitch was extracted. I think we can tell for certain that she was seen as a non-cooperative player, as somebody who was in the way. And, you know, I really want to mention that listening to her, it becomes so clear that her being a woman has a lot to do with it, right? All these men are basically trying to do business as they see fit. And I can't help feeling that even the attitude toward acting ambassador Bill Taylor, who by all accounts is just as straight State Department, longtime civil servant, no irregular kind of foreign policy, as he's called it, the attitude toward him is different than the attitude toward her.
Keep going. In what ways?
She's an uppity woman. She's an uppity woman who needs to be gotten out of the way.
You know, I was going to ask you this much later, but since you brought it up, there's another story in the news today that might be the big national lead were it not for the impeachment hearings and the conviction of Roger Stone. But I wonder if you think they're related in a certain way. The story is the release of hundreds of emails from Trump immigration advisor Stephen Miller to a Breitbart staffer showing even more explicit white nationalism than people already suspected him of. Now, Putin, besides being an autocrat, is also sometimes seen as a hero of white nationalism and traditional masculinity, traditional gender roles generally. And I'm curious if you see Trump constantly sucking up to Putin as related to that at all.
Yes and no. I mean, look, I'm not a Russia conspiracist, and I think that this is getting a little bit into Russia conspiracy territory. I think that these guys are each evil in similar ways on their own terms. I don't think that Trump became a misogynist, racist, white supremacist, white male supremacist leader because Putin made him that way.
Mm-hmm. My question about that is whether part of the right-wing male nationalist base that Trump has always been trying to appeal to already had a Putin thing going. And so he latched on to that.
Trump I don't think they had a Putin thing going. I think the Putin thing is an opportunistic kind of infection, right? I think they had a white male supremacist thing going. And I think in that way, they're soulmates. They're true soulmates.
Here's another excerpt from this morning referring to what the Democrats say is a smear campaign against Yovanovitch by Rudy Giuliani. The Democrat staff attorney, Daniel Goldman, here asked Yovanovitch about some of the alleged smears.
Was the allegation that you had created a do not prosecute list to give to the prosecutor general in Ukraine true?
No.
In fact, didn't the corrupt prosecutor general himself later recant those allegations?
Yes.
Now, when these articles were first published, did the State Department issue a response?
As you said, there was a series of articles. So after the first article, which was an interview with Mr. Lutsenko and was only really about me and made certain allegations about me, the State Department came out the following day with a very strong statement saying that, these allegations were fabrications.
So, Masha, I think the attorney Goldman was getting at a larger issue there than allowing Yovanovitch to deny the smears against her, which was also important to do. But I think he was establishing how the very top of the State Department allowed itself to be co-opted into Trump's campaign goal of getting investigations into the Bidens in 2016. You've written a lot over the years about democracy versus autocracy. I'm curious if you see that State Department behavior not coming out in defense of her when they really believed she did nothing wrong as important to an understanding of how the Trump administration is different from others in U.S. history in what we consider democratic norms.
Yes, absolutely. And, to me, that was one of the most chilling parts of the testimony, because we've certainly seen, and I saw this when I was still living in Moscow, we've seen countries attack U.S. ambassadors. Ambassador Mike McFaul in Moscow was subjected to vicious persecution in the Russian state-controlled media. The difference is that he had the backing of the administration. But to see somebody who's basically hung out to dry while representing the United States government in a foreign country, that's just absolutely terrifying. And I think it absolutely gets to the nature of the autocratic attempt that we're watching. We're basically watching an aspiring autocrat try to subjugate the ways of government to himself, not through regular channels, not through reappointing ambassadors and doing all sorts of institutional things that we're used to seeing, but through kind of brute force that undermines not only individuals, but the very functioning of government. And I think that this, I've been thinking a lot today about the word corruption, like what we all think, what we talk about when we talk about corruption, because it is evident to me that we're all talking about different things. Ambassador Yovanovitch was talking about specific ways of sort of self-dealing that is endemic to the post-Soviet states.
Usually for money.
Money and power, which are inseparable, actually, in those areas. Trump is talking about an imaginary corruption that you can be used as a smear word. But what we're seeing in that, introducing that kind of dysfunction to government is corruption, right? It is corrupting something to the point where it is basically unrecognizable.
Another of the notable moments this morning, and I think it very much relates to what you were just talking about, was when Intel Committee Chairman Adam Schiff noted to Yovanovitch that President Trump was attacking her on Twitter at that moment while she was testifying under oath. Here is some of that exchange.
As we sit here testifying, the president is attacking you on Twitter. And I'd like to give you a chance to respond. I'll read part of one of his tweets. Everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. She started off in Somalia. How did that go? He goes on to say later in the tweet, is a U.S. president's absolute right to appoint ambassadors. First of all, Ambassador Yovanovitch, the Senate has a chance to confirm or deny an ambassador, do they not?
Yes, advise and consent.
But would you like to respond to the president's attack that everywhere you went turned bad?
I don't think I have such powers, not in Mogadishu, Somalia, not in other places. I actually think that where I've served over the years, I and others have demonstrably made things better.
Now, as if that much of the exchange wasn't compelling enough, it concluded with this.
The president implicitly threatened you in that call record. And now the president in real time is attacking you. What effect do you think that has on other witnesses' willingness to come forward and expose wrongdoing?
Well, it's very intimidating.
Masha, what's your reaction to that exchange?
Okay, that's runner-up to the most chilling moment in testimony. I mean, it's, I think, like most people who are listening to this, I kind of feel like I can't believe I'm hearing this. But what is symptomatic here is Trump's campaign against government itself. This is very much how he campaigned when he was candidate. This is what he meant by drain the swamp. He didn't mean root out corruption. He meant destroy government as we know it. And he continues to do it while he's president. Which is a very this is characteristic of contemporary autocrats, of Putin, of Erdogan, of Orban, who take the power of leadership and refuse the responsibility of it. Right. This is the first president I think we've ever seen who doesn't seem at all burdened by the responsibility he's taken on. He can only blame other people and rage against them and undermine systematically on a daily basis the very nature of government.
There's already chatter in the media, that Trump's tweet could result in another article of impeachment, in addition to the ones that are probably forthcoming, based on intimidating witnesses in a congressional inquiry into him. Do you think that's plausible?
I'm not in a position to judge him, and I think that it sounds plausible. I wish we would see a lot more articles of impeachment. I wish that that this inquiry were not focused so narrowly on Ukraine.
By the way, I thought the Republicans were in a very weak position today, so much so that even the Republicans on the committee praised Yovanovitch for her service. They weren't trying to pile on to these smears of her, because I guess they were convinced that they would look bad because they've been so disproven. Instead, they tried to score points in various other ways. Here's a few seconds how one of the Republican members used his time, Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio.
I have a unanimous consent request that an article entitled Whistleblower is Expected to Testify Soon, House Intelligence Chairman Schiff Says, Wall Street Journal, September 29th, 2019, be included in the record.
Without objection.
I have a unanimous consent request that an article entitled Whistleblower Reaches Agreement to Testify will appear very soon, Representative Adam Schiff says, USA Today, September 29th, 2019.
Without objection.
I have a unanimous consent request... Article entitled, Schiff Confirms Tentative Agreement for Whistleblower to Testify Before House Intelligence Committee, CNN, September 29th, 2019.
Without objection.
I have a unanimous consent request.
And on he went for about 5 minutes, I guess, because that's how much time he had. So they're off on this tangent of whether Adam Schiff knew in September the identity of the whistleblower. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, I think that you can only read those responses as weak from the point of view of if you read the entire proceedings as a sort of straight trial, where we basically take the Democratic hypothesis, which is that Donald Trump abused power by trying to pressure the Ukrainian president to conduct an investigation and make public statements in his personal political interests and withheld American aid for that purpose. And so if we see the Democrats trying to prove that and the Republicans trying to rebut that, then that all of that sounds like silliness. But if you look at it as two completely non-overlapping realities, so I've already summed up reality one, which is the Democratic reality. The Republican reality is that the Democrats are out to get Trump, that they have nothing, but they have chosen this obscure Ukrainian story in order to try to get him. And so in that reality, actually going on and on about the various articles that indicate that Adam Schiff knew the whistleblower's name a month ago, that's just part of throwing up the smokescreen that makes the story seem like a whole bunch of confusing information, which is another way of saying a whole bunch of nothing. And really, it's all about the Democrats trying to get Trump. And in that sense, the way that I read those parts of the questioning where a Republican representative would address Ambassador Yovanovitch very respectfully, talk for a while about her terrific career, 33-year career in the Foreign Service, and then say, but actually, you don't know anything about this. You have no first-hand knowledge of what is supposedly at stake in this inquiry. There is a point to that, and I think they're making it well.
And so your point right now and in the New Yorker article that you published yesterday is that the two realities are not equivalent, but if the Democrats want to break through to enough of the public, this narrow prosecution, as if it was a straight trial and there were 12 nonpartisan jurors just weighing the evidence, what we're watching on TV so far is not enough. What do you have in mind?
Well, actually, to be honest, I'm really pessimistic, and I don't think anything can be enough. I think that we're going to see the House indict and the Senate acquit. But I was thinking more in terms of the historical record, right? What is the record that we're laying down? Are we laying down the record of the president abusing power in this one particular instance? It's a bad instance, but frankly, it's by far not the worst that we have seen during this presidency. I think the Stephen Miller emails are actually worse. I think that the entire history of the war on immigrants over the last 3 years is definitely worse. I think that the systematic use of the power of the presidency to make profit, the insertion of the president's family into government in such a seamless way that we no longer notice it, the endless self-dealing, the malfeasance with security clearances, and I can go on and on and on. A lot of those things are actually worse than the phone call with Zelensky. And I want to see that hashed out in public, not because I have hope that it will sway the Trump base, I actually don't, but because I want that on the record. I think we need to lay down a record of the presidency, and we need to of this presidency. And I think that we need to affirm for a large part of the population, a majority of the population, that we see it this way. We see this as not normal.
So last thing, in an imaginary conversation that you might have with Nancy Pelosi and laid out what you just laid out, what do you think she would say about going there as a matter of practicality?
Well, as a journalist, I should never, ever take a question like that, right? I don't know what Nancy Pelosi would say. I can surmise that her logic is pragmatic, that she's an extremely experienced politician, which I'm not, and that I'm sure that there are very strong arguments that she would that she would articulate about how this is the best possible chance, that the narrow prosecution is the best possible chance, that the straightforward evidence in this case gives the impeachment inquiry the best possible chance. That's my hunch. That's my understanding of her position. I happen to disagree, but I'm not Nancy Pelosi, and I don't have those choices to make.
Masha Gessen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Before we go, as part of our impeachment coverage, we're inviting podcast listeners to try your hand at writing your own article of impeachment. One article of impeachment that accuses the president of a high crime and states how he committed it. After we get some, we'll invite Trump defenders to call in and push back. If you'd like to propose an article of impeachment, write it down, then call our voicemail to record it at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Or if you'd rather do it in writing, we have a webpage with a form you can use. That's at impeachmentpodcast.org, impeachmentpodcast.org. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.